From somewhere in Northeast Indiana, Mike Davidson lives. And now your host of the podcast, Mike Davidson.
I was supposed to record this Sunday night, doing it Monday morning. I blame the boy. Hell yes, Mr. Rob Room. Thank you very much. It's me. It's Mike. Mike Davidson Lives is the name of the podcast. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for hanging out for the next half hour. And I don't really blame my son. I had everything ready to go. He was up in bed, and he woke up, and he was just bawling. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I don't want to go to bed to drink water. Like, he was shaking. He was crying. I guess he had a nightmare. He was a little confused. So he came down, hang out with me in the living room. We both passed out on the recliner. Hopefully he's okay. He seemed okay this morning before I took him over to Grandma's. He and his sister's hanging out for the week because it is spring break. And that means Grandma's going to be driven crazy while me and the wife each go to our respective day jobs. But he seemed okay. He had a great Easter yesterday, as did his two sisters. All spoiled. Two Easter egg hunts. One here, one at Grandma's. Big ol' Easter baskets left by the Easter Bunny, and the contents of which have been smeared, crumpled, lost in our carpet already. Good times. But they had a blast, and glad to see it. We did Saturday, and hopefully we don't do anything else for the next whatever, because this was like my third straight trip down to Kokomo, but the wife and I took the kids down there to meet up with some old co-workers of hers, hung out with them for a bit at a Starbucks, got some caffeine, took the kids to a playground to work out the energy, and then met up with Mr. Rob Roop, Cone Palace down in Kokomo, which is basically the local DQ there, only better. Had lunch with him for about an hour or so and caught up. Because when I was at his birthday, his surprise 70th, couple weeks back. I mean, it's like a wedding, man. The wedding party, the groom and the bride have to make the rounds, say hi. You don't get to sit down and talk to everybody as much as you'd like to. So we hung out, finally got to meet the bub, because he has not met Logan yet, and we caught up. Don't want to talk about everything that we discussed, but like I told him about Nobody Here Gets Out Alive, the Doors book. He has not read that, but I was just giving him my two cents about it. Like, you know, the other three, as I said in previous podcasts, the other three guys, yeah, okay, we like to party, we also like to play music, and Jim Morrison was just kind of, you know, a D-bag. But Rob was looking through his phone because somewhere on his device he has a picture of him posing with Robbie Krieger, guitar player from The Doors. Robbie and his son blew through Kokomo a few years back for, they have like a summer concert series in the park down there. And they came through, played some music, some Doors tunes, and I asked Rob, well, was Robbie pretty cool? And he goes, yeah. Did you guys talk about anything? No, because I was a little starstruck. So even in his late age, Mr. Rob Roop, still that inner teenager in him, seeing somebody that cool, you know, a very influential guitar player, I think that would kind of wow me a little bit too. A little bit. Because he's a celebrity. Kinda. I don't think your average Taylor Swift fan would know who Robbie Krieger is. By the way, congrats to my dad. More importantly, I guess, congrats to the Purdue Boilermakers. God, this was a difficult game. They're kind of an enigma, but they are now in the Final Four alongside North Carolina State, who they'll play Saturday, Alabama, and UConn, a.k.a. Duke 2. We're all rooting against UConn, right? But Purdue finally going to the Final Four after 44 years, which means the last time the Boilermakers were at this stage in the tourney, I was like crapping myself in diapers. I was like 2 months old. Okay, that's a long time. Zach Edey, you know, and kind of get, not to make this into a sports talk podcast, because I don't want to dumb you down and I don't want to dumb myself down. I like talking about sports occasionally, but you know, Dan Lebatard talked about how he was an uninteresting player and he wanted Purdue out of the tourney soon because, oh, he just sucks. He's just not fun to watch. Okay, sorry about the lack of sexiness there, Dan, you stupid moron. But, you know, Zach Edey had like 40 points and, was it, 16 rebounds? That's quite the freaking double-double right there, okay? And Purdue only won like by six, I think. If Zach Edey had an average game, let's just say he only had like 20 points and 10 rebounds, Purdue would have lost to Tennessee by 10 because Purdue was turning the ball over left and right. They rarely hit a three-point shot. I mean, Tennessee was playing their asses off. Hats off to the Volunteers. They wanted to win this game. Just, you know, shit didn't work out. Edey, as my dad would say, you can't coach height. But, you know, again, he played his ass off. He did what he was supposed to do, and more so. And, you know, I don't care how it looks to a guy who doesn't play basketball. But that's how it is. Okay, sorry, didn't win style points on your sports journalist card there, but Zach Edey did a very first of all, Zach, when they were cutting down the net, Zach Edey, he's 7'4", he didn't need a net, he just, or ladder, he just stood there and snipped a little piece of the net. He kind of tall, but he walked over and gave a piece of the net to Gene Cady, legendary Boilers coach, winningest in history, won a bunch of Big Ten titles, but as weird as it sounds, man, Purdue under Cady never went to the Final Four. They came close with Glenn Robinson, but they never went to the Final Four. You know, there was a lot of success in that program, but just with Cady, it just never happened. But very classy thing. So Purdue again taking on North Carolina State, who beat Duke. Thanks, North Carolina State, Alabama, and UConn. Okay, RIPD to the late, great Louis Gossett Jr., died this past week. He was 87, 88. Probably should have written that down. Great actor. Great actor. And a whole bunch of stuff. There was that sci-fi movie he was in with Dennis Quaid that my dad really liked. It was like, I forget the name of it. It involved a mine. Mine Enemy. That's it. Enemy Mine or something. He was the alien in that. My dad loved that movie. I remember him from Iron Eagle, those movies. Yeah, a teenager can fly a jet fighter and beat the enemy. Okay, a little far-fetched, but hey, you know, you got to see planes in the movie. When you're an eight-year-old, you see jets flying around all the time. That makes a movie. But more importantly, he won an Oscar, Best Supporting Actor for an Officer and a Gentleman. His iconic role is Sergeant Emil Foley, not Emily. He did not play Emily. This was not made for a modern audience, but what, you know, not to dog on a guy's career, but when you get that award, you end up making a lot more movies, and sometimes you make some bad ones. It happened to Michael Caine, despite his legendary filmography. You know, he won Best Supporting Actor for Hannah and His Sisters. He ended up in Jaws: The Revenge, and he couldn't get the award because he was out making that bad movie. But again, you can still get the trophy mailed to you, right? I don't think Michael Caine wanted to F with the award ceremony. That's what was going on there. With that said, you know, Louis Gossett Jr., he too ended up in a bad Jaws sequel before Michael Caine. It was Jaws 3D, and that thing was a piece of shit. And that's not a knock at Louis Gossett Jr. I think it's more or less a knock at his agent, because you could cast him, you could cast Denzel Washington, Laurence Olivier, Tilda Swinton in the role that they cast for Louis Gossett Jr. This movie was always going to be a turd, but he played Calvin Bouchard. And he knew that because when you watch the credits to Jaws 3D, at the end of starring, you know, Dennis Quaid, Bess Armstrong, and all that, and Louis Gossett Jr. as Louis Bouchard, and like, you're like, who the hell is Louis Bouchard? It's like, you're supposed to know who the hell this character is, because he's so iconic or something. But that movie was made basically because, hey, you know, Jaws made money. Jaws 2 somehow made money. Jaws 3D, okay, you had the 3D glasses. You can see gross things stick out at you from the screen. Kind of got away from the whole storytelling aspect of the original one. But he did star in a bunch of stuff. he did win an Oscar. He was a great actor and made a few favorites for some people out there. So thoughts and condolences to his family. Godzilla and King Kong, that movie made a buttload of money Easter weekend. I think like $80 million, which means, hey, people like to go to the theaters and be entertained in junk. Stumped God, Ghostbusters, a new one there. A bunch of movies like Dune 2. By the way, it was kind of a good start to the year for Warner Brothers after some of the disastrous DC movies last year. I mean, I know they made a buttload of money with Barbie, but Dune 2 has made over $600 million, so it's doing all right. And then you got Godzilla, King Kong, that one. And by the way, in Japan, Easter weekend, when they say he is risen, they're not talking about Jesus. They're talking about the giant lizard. All right, so this is linked up on the Mike Davidson Facebook page. I found this interesting, given the current climate of Hollywood. The Short Night, this was based on a novel. It's a screenplay that Alfred Hitchcock was working on. They had a draft completed. They were planning it out. They had some talk about who would star in this movie. It's a spy thriller. He's getting back to his spy thriller roots, kind of the North by Northwest stuff. He started getting ill. This is back in the late 70s, and unfortunately, Alfred Hitchcock would die. But no one has touched this property since. And it's weird because, hell, even Orson Welles, they found some old stuff that he did. Like Netflix reworked an old movie he had that was never really completed. And that was put on their streamer. But no one has dared touched it. I mean, this movie, The Short Night, has never really been made. It was just like, okay, they got to the screenwriting part of it, the screenplay. And no one has touched it. And, with all the IPs out there, with all the remakes, reboots, flogging of sequels and all this stuff, no one has thought, hey, maybe there's someone out there that can make this Alfred Hitchcock thing work. I tell you, this would be original, all things considered, right? Because no one has seen anything. I mean, no one has seen this story told, this movie told. And I'm not one to tell somebody that knows what he's doing what to do, but Christopher Nolan, this would be right up his alley. I think that he could make an Alfred Hitchcock movie out of an Alfred Hitchcock movie, or what would have been an Alfred Hitchcock movie. But just The Short Night, I'm very interested in this thing. And this looks like it was based on kind of like one of those pulp books. It wasn't really a big book. Not like The Spy Who Came Out of the Cold, but kind of look for that. Okay, Lizzo is done with music, and it breaks our hearts. She went on an Instagram rant. I don't know how serious she is about this, because when somebody says, I quit on social media, 2 days later, they're like, hey, I'm making a new album, or hey, I'm hanging out with so-and-so, or hey, I'm back on here promoting this. I don't know how serious she is about this, because look at her, the girl's got to eat, first of all. Secondly, I think it's just because she's realizing she can't always be as popular as she was about a year or two back. And by the way, when people accuse you of mistreating people that work for you, you kind of have to answer for that, right? Not a cancel culture thing, but if somebody's like, yeah, I've worked for her, she was kind of a jerk. And that's the other thing, too. How much camaraderie can there be amongst employees? Because the controversy with her about a year ago is that she was accused of taking some of her backup dancers to a strip club in, like, was it the Netherlands? And, of course, the banana jokes all ran amok and all that stuff. And, maybe it's one of those things where keeping your distance and keeping things professional is the best way to go. Not being aloof, not being a dick, but just, okay, well, it was a great show tonight. I'll see you guys tomorrow. Get some rest, and we'll do it again on the road, okay? That, it's, I know that's not really what rock bands do or pop stars do, but, I mean, if I'm a manager, if I'm a manager of a big act like Lizzo, I mean, like, in terms of reach. If I'm a manager, like, am I cool with them all going out together and such and stuff like that? You know, it's a question that you really need to ask. But Lizzo is done with music for now until the fridge money runs out. All right, kind of showing us where we are as a culture. Gwyneth Paltrow is doing a little online Q&A, and somebody asked her if she was in a polyamorous relationship or if she's into that. Because, if anything, we need to know more about people's personal lives. And she goes, well, no judgment. And by the way, you don't have to say no judgment. Just say, yeah, it's not my thing. She says that she's a one-guy gal. And that's fine by me. And either way, I really don't care. But, I mean, it's just the old adage, you only need one wick to make a candle, and that's what Gwyneth Paltrow is telling everybody, so there you go. Don't think you're going to put your car keys in a bowl with this lady. I don't think she's ever seen a pair of car keys, by the way. She's probably always had a chauffeur. All right, the power of Joe Rogan. Not to cup this guy's balls, but this is a positive of where we are as a society. I talk about the negative stuff because it's funny, but this is a positive. He had guitarist Gary Clark Jr. on. And Gary Clark has been, like when I was in radio, we played a few of his songs. He's more of a blues guy. He's got kind of that tinge in an era of 21 Pilots, Greta Van Fleet, and Falling in Reverse. It's kind of hard to be your own guy and be a rock guy. Okay. But, you know, he's had a few things hit, but I don't think he's ever had, like, the popularity of a lot of artists on radio. But he was on hanging out with Joe, talking about his new album, and having a conversation. You know, that's the nice thing about a lot of these podcasts, where you can interview artists and actors and such. You can actually get to know them a little more without that soundbite culture of late night, because, you know, late night you only have like 10 minutes, 15 minutes with a, you know, big time actor. You let the band come out and play a song, and maybe you ask them a question or two, depending on how big the band is, and then, you know, call it a night. But he talks with Gary Clark Jr., and after that, Gary Clark Jr.'s material on Spotify, the streaming went up not a little bit, 500%. Like, because the listeners of the Rogan Experience were like, well, hell, let's check him out. He seems like a cool dude. And they did. So he's gotten a lot more streaming action. And this is kind of a touchdown celebration dance for Joe. Because what was the bitching about a couple of years ago? Oh, he's spreading misinformation. And we as artists need to stand up and, you know, protest. And then now we got Neil Young and Joni Mitchell in their 80s crawling back to this platform. But here Gary Clark is, you know, he's a guy that's been around a bit himself, maybe not as long as Joni or Neil, but he sits down, he talks with Joe and lets people get to know him, get to listen to a little bit of his music, and they're like, hell yes! And ta-da! Joe Rogan has more influence than your Jimmy Kimmels and your Stephen Colbert's and your Jimmy Fallon's, because, you know, a lot of these guys are about ass-kissing artists and not really talking with them, or trying to slam dunk on Donald Trump every frickin' night. Like, every frickin' night. And, you know, here's Joe. He's just like, well, okay, we're going to have this guy on who plays guitar, who's been around a bit, and we're gonna talk. And people are interested in that. You know, getting to know somebody and hearing their music, not necessarily scoring sound bites for your talk show. So congrats to Joe. Congrats to Gary getting some love there. By the way, in case you haven't noticed this, if you didn't look at the Mike Davidson Facebook page Monday morning as I'm recording, I posted a meme that wished you all a very Merry Christmas day after Easter because, well, Monday is April 1st, April Fool's Day. Which is not a holiday, which means you go to work. If you go to work on it, is it really a holiday? Halloween's kind of different because the kids love it, and I will take time off for Halloween if I get the chance, okay? So, April Fool's Day is just a day for obnoxious people to play jokes on you. And, like, the window to be successful with a joke on April Fool's Day, for most, is very limited because you have only, like, an hour or two after that person's been awake before they can process information and then be very skeptical of shit. And I think a lot of businesses, I think a lot of people in the media know this because now they're ramping up a week before. And you really need to start training yourself to think this way. That, okay, if something is going to happen on April 1st, or better yet, okay, if something seems a little weird, ask yourself what the date is. And if it's about a week or two out from April 1st, chances are it could be an April Fool's joke. So you got to be kind of cautious. I am victim to this myself because a week ago, they were talking about how 7-Eleven was going to unveil hot dog flavored seltzer water. I mean, they had all these fruit flavors, like, you know, your grape, your lime, whatever. Oh, and hot dog flavored water, and there's the Limp Bizkit references, which made it sound even more disgusting. And I almost linked this up on the Mike Davidson Facebook page, but somebody had pointed out, you know, because I was reading other stories, other takes on this, and they're like, you know, next week is April 1st. Ooh, yeah. So I didn't, but this was a very big learning opportunity for me, not just because sometimes I could be a sucker, but that unbiased pedestal the media puts themselves up on. Like a lot of journalists, a lot of people on TV and print or internet or whatever newspaper people do now. Because they're trying to get it on the sense of humor game and, humor is subjective. You know, a dude finds a fart joke funny, a woman will make him sleep on the couch for farting too loud. Okay. Everybody has a different take on humor. And, okay, hot dog flavored water, that's great. That's awesome. But the media was sharing this. A lot of news outlets were sharing this unthinkingly, or maybe they were in on the gag. Regardless, they listed it this morning as a gag on April Fool's jokes. What were the best ones? And they're spreading all these jokes around like, ha ha ha, it's funny. But again, humor is subjective. Not that I was offended by hot dog water, but what I'm pointing out is somebody in the media thought, oh, this is funny. We can get away with fooling them on this because April Fool's Day's coming up. And when you're actively participating in something with something that you think is funny, that proves that you have a certain bias towards something. And if you think it's funny, you're going to get a load of these guys falling for it. And then, lo and behold, oh yeah, it was always a gag. And then if you're a thinking person, you're like, well, if they're going to do this with an April Fool's joke, telling you some things, telling you some other things, or not telling you some things, you start to wonder, well, what else are they doing? So in a way, a lot of these news outlets are kind of tipping their hand about, okay, yeah, we're not really as unbiased as we make ourselves out to be because we think hot dog flavored water is funny, and it's even funnier when we can get people who read our read our content, watch our videos, if we can get them to fall for it. It's okay, good job, guys. Okay, so the big story next week from parts of Texas into the Great Lakes portion of New York and somewhere in between Fort Wayne and IN is Eclipse-a-palooza. You know, the big solar eclipse is going to happen next week, April 8th. It's a Monday. It's going to happen mid-afternoon here in the Hoosier State. And pretty exciting stuff because it's not going to happen again in this part of the world for a good chunk of time. I wish I had that written down. Do not. But meteorologists have been, they're nerds about this. And okay, yeah, that's a bit of a bias. Here's the thing. It's kind of hard not to have a little excitement about a big rock blocking out the sun. Okay. I'm sure dinosaurs were a little excited, maybe even curious, when that big rock came down millions upon millions of years ago. Not the moon. There would be no planet Earth if it was the moon. They're gauging weather forecasts now. And here in Indiana, next week, it's more than likely that there's going to be cloud cover during this very rare moment in time. And, that's just typical for Indiana. But the thing is, too, I mean, if that's the case, think of the money you're going to save on eyeglasses and how unlikely it is here in Indiana you're going to go blind from staring up at the sun. I mean, it's still going to get dark. That's the part to me that's going to be kind of cool. Not necessarily watching this thing, because I made the bonehead mistake years ago. It was August of 2017. We had a little bit of it. We weren't in the direct path. I think the moon, it either went south of us or north of us, but we only had a partial eclipse here in Fort Wayne. But I looked up, it kind of got dim, and man, only for a little bit that hurt my eye. You don't have to look up at the sky as it's getting dark, is what I'm getting at here. And to me, that, just watching everything else get dark, that's the cool part. But they already have the news stories out saying, okay, here's a sign that if you go out to any store and buy these eclipse glasses that allow you to stare at the sun or the moon, you might be getting scammed. Yeah, well, again, if it's April 9th, you wake up and you're blind, yeah, you're scammed. But regardless, don't look up at the sun unless you have one of those special telescopes or whatever. Okay, so what we got here? Texas and North Carolina State. North Carolina State doing very well, men's and women's basketball. But the women's game was in Portland. These two teams, I mean, North Carolina State beat Texas, but kudos to both of them for, I guess, being professionals, okay, because, college players do get paid now. But they discovered before the game tipped off between these two teams, they discovered that the three-point lines were different on each side of the court. Like, one was further out than the other. And this was just before game time. And, the coaches found this out. And, of course, I'm sure they were both irritated because, somebody didn't do their effing job. They elected to play the game. Okay, each one. And it's one of those things where, like, okay, each half, one team's going to get a three-point line that's further out than the other. Right? So, not really equal, but equal, if that makes any sense. But these were college officials that signed off on this shit. And these guys are supposed to be pros. And they basically shat the bed when it came to getting this court ready for a playoff game, essentially. And I'm sure there's some Texas fans upset about it. I mean, there's some other... I didn't watch the game. But there's other aspects of the game that could have been in North Carolina State's favor. But, like, the fact that you had two sides of a court and you could tell one line was further out than the other. Just looking at this. But whoever made the court and whoever signed off on the court didn't do their due diligence. And not a good luck for a sports organization run by academics, for Christ's sake. So somebody got kind of screwed there. All right, so I'm almost done here. I still have a lot to talk about, but you know how it goes. Two examples of how Oakland, California, is an example of how bad California has gotten. Gary Newsom has signed off on about 500 cameras being placed around the city to capture license plate info and how this is going to fight crime and help people find suspects. And I'm wondering where they're placing these. If they're placing them around roads, it sounds more like a cash grab for traffic violations, to be honest. It's probably not going to do a whole hell of a lot for drug trafficking, for prostitution, for murder, for rape, and all that fun stuff. And there's a 102-year-old man who's getting fined by the city out there because of graffiti on his fence. And the thing is, it's not his, because he's obviously a 102-year-old man is not going to be in a gang. Sorry. He's not an OG. If he was, he'd be an OOOG, okay? But he's not. He's a 102-year-old man in a wheelchair. They're fining him because of some graffiti other gangs have put up because he can't get it off. So his 70-year-old son is having to remove the graffiti off of this thing. And when you're 70, you're not really a spring chicken yourself, so his son's probably going through all sorts of back and knee pain getting rid of this crap just so the city doesn't fine his dad. Cities are not designed for people who follow the laws. They're designed for people to pay for all the laws that are broken. And unfortunately, this 102-year-old man and his 70-year-old son are paying the cost for it. I don't know how it is over in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'm sure that city's got its problems. But recently, a camera. This is cool. I have this on the Mike Davidson Facebook page. I guess I'll wrap it up here. A horse-mounted cop runs down a shoplifting suspect who stole hundreds of dollars worth of crap from, surprise, Walgreens, thought he could get away with it, and was speaking gibberish because he's probably high off of, you know, who knows. But the mounted cop runs him down with a horse, gets off and arrests him. Kudos to the cop. But Albuquerque PD on horseback, I feel like Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul missed an opportunity here, obviously. Hey, so with that all said and done, I'm done yammering. Until next time, stay fresh.
You've been listening to Mike Davidson Live. Be sure to check him out on social media. Like him at facebook.com/mdavidsonlives. Follow him on Twitter. Look for @DavidsonLives.